obsessed.
Oh, I didn't do my homework. I started it.
I can't remember what it was.
To watch Murder at the Cecil Hotel.
Oh, God.
I got about halfway through. Well, the thing is, like, I already know most of it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a pretty well-known case.
It's not... To me, it's... Oh, hi, I'm Ash.
I'm Laura.
It's not as... I'm just going to leave that exactly how it fucking is.
Okay.
It's not as captivating to me as The Night Stalker. Just from, like... It's just very... I don't know. Like, The Night Stalker, they did it in the way of the investigation, but they did it in kind of like a way that you're not used to seeing documentaries.
Yeah.
And I think it's unfortunate timing for that to come out after Night Stalker, because Night Stalker was so impressive.
It is a bit of a second act, but what I really liked about the Cecil Hotel one is how many different avenues they actually explore.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just the straight investigation. They go to all sorts of people.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that even I, like, because I've watched a few different documentaries on it and sort of heard what the theories are. But there was even stuff in there that I didn't know, which I thought was pretty interesting. So... Maybe watch it when you're in the mood for something where you're like, oh, I want to watch it.
Because I watched like the first 2.5 episodes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that it was hard for me to watch it during, like, while I was working. Because usually I had something playing and I'm working at the same time.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There was just, I just couldn't really get into it. I think because, especially at the start, it just wasn't really grabbing me because it was shit I already knew.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, with The Night Stalker, straight away, they introduced the grown-up woman of his youngest victim.
Yeah.
It's like one of the first people that you talk to. And I was like, holy shit, you know, like, yeah. Whereas the Cecil Hotel, it's just like, this is the story. And I really fucking, like, I know I'm being nitpicky here, but I hate the voiceover of her fucking Tumblr posts.
Yeah, it's very
dramatic.
Like,
this is something I would have done first year university. Don't do that.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. Like, I don't think you can watch it and compare it to Night Stalker because you'll just hate it.
Mm.
But it's like, if you can get in a place where you... I mean, you did try watching it. If you just don't like it, you don't like it. Like,
I'm going to finish it.
Okay.
I've just also been watching Buffy.
Buffy is just stellar content. So completely understandable.
Yeah. And I haven't watched it since I was in high school. So, like, it feels not new, but, like... Like, I don't remember it all.
It's like revisiting an old friend. You're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's been good. So that's kind of what I've been doing. So, yeah, sorry, I didn't do my homework. But on the topic of the Cecil Hotel.
Okay.
I received an Instagram message.
Oh.
On the Instagram. Duh. From one of our very first original listeners.
Mm.
And... She goes, so this is my favorite thing. The interaction was like, just wondering if you've watched, you know, the series.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't, check it out, blah, blah, blah. And if you have, I have something to show you. And I was like, Laura's watched it.
Yeah.
I haven't finished it, but I know the story. Show me anyway.
Okay.
B_Marisa Nez. I'm so sorry if I'm getting that wrong. She goes, you know the Morbid Black Star dude, right?
Yeah.
So I followed him and I was looking through his posts and look what I saw.
No.
He shared an image of Teal Swan. Oh. He is part of Teal Tribe.
Oh, crisscross. This is exciting. I'm reading the caption.
It's pretty fucking bad.
Oh, no. He, like, idolizes her.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's everything we were saying about in that episode, that her followers are vulnerable people. I mean, he got... Even the documentary, like, you see him, he's been, like, torn to shreds.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden he's like, ooh, Teal Swan.
Yep.
Oh, goodness.
So,
thank you for showing us that.
I know, right? I was like, oh, my God, Lou's going to flip.
Oh, I'm having, like, an internal... Inside I'm screaming, but because I'm on a microphone, I can't be screaming into it. So
that was a... Because I knew we were going to end up talking about Cecil Hotel just for a little bit. And I just had to bring that up because...
Oh, thank you.
I know.
That's so exciting. Oh, my gosh.
It's crazy, isn't it?
She's everywhere. She's everywhere. Oh. Oh, it's also good to note that my social media ads are starting to die down.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I still get one probably a week.
You should just Google some random shit.
Oh, I have been. What? There was something weird that came up the other day. Oh, I can't remember. I think someone told me to look something up and then it came up with a really weird suggestion. Oh, and then there's always weird Wish products all the time. And
yeah.
You're just like, I don't even know.
Since Tanner bought us Udi's, he's been getting ads for Udi's, which is stupid because he's already bought the product.
Yeah.
But there was like a picture of a guy and a girl in the exact same Udi's that Tanner has bought us. It's like they knew, which they probably did. But
oh my God.
Yes. So that was some great news. So thank you so much for sending us that.
Yeah, thank you. That has blown my mind.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm sorry, I haven't finished the series.
That's all right. You'll maybe get there at some
I'll
point.
Try. I'll try.
Oh, actually, I saw something really weird driving over here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I hope you find this as weird as I found it. But I was driving along the main road to come to Ashley's house because this is where we record. And I was driving past a KFC, right? And coming out of the parking lot was a white hearse. Do you find that as weird as I find that?
I mean, hearse drivers got to eat too.
Well, yeah, but because I'm a little bit of a Fruit Loop, my first thought wasn't, oh, the driver stopped for lunch. It was, oh, so that's where they cremate the bodies.
That's not where that happens because they don't have that there. They have deep fryers. Well, see, they would be deep fried bodies.
That was my first thought, but then my second thought was, oh, what if it's actually people that is KFC?
The other white meat.
The other white meat. But yeah, I don't know why. I just found that very weird. And I like drove along and I was just like staring dead
ahead. I guess
it
is weird. It's like seeing a teacher outside of school.
Well, because the other thing was the guy's like driving along and he's like smoking out of the side of the hearse. And I was like, that's a bit gross.
Yeah. You know? I guess he doesn't really have many passengers to complain about it.
Well, because my whole thing, I mean, I wasn't so much thinking that, but more like imagine if you're at a funeral, right, and they're loading your loved one into the hearse and you open the back of the hearse and you just get cigarette smoke the whole time.
His window was open.
It was open, but I mean, like my ex, he smoked in my car and the smell has never gone.
Yeah, but there's nobody that's in the car. I don't think they're paying attention to the smell of the hearse. I mean, I'm sure it wouldn't smell great.
Yeah.
It probably smells like formaldehyde.
Ugh.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You're probably right.
But oh, they always have flowers and stuff in there anyway.
I was
anyway.
Just thinking that, yeah. I don't know. I just thought it was a very weird sight to see.
Maybe it smells great.
Maybe. Maybe they put all perfumes up in that shit.
Maybe he's just got incense burning. That like seems like a fire hazard. Yeah. We both went to the same place.
Oh, funny. But yeah.
That is my old story. So, have you been watching anything?
I have.
New? Oh
yeah.
Is this something we have to save for recommendation station or?
It's kind of both because I've been watching them, but also I recommend them.
Okay.
So do I do them now or should I save it for the end?
It's up to you. My recommendation station is going to be Buffy, so maybe you can save it.
All right, I'll save it. I'll sit on that and try and remember it.
Yeah. So because of the two longer episodes we did last week, whatever.
Yeah.
We're just going to keep going with the same formula. So I am going to go first.
Woo.
This week. And I did say to Laura I had a bit of a long story. And it's not so much that it's long and convoluted. It's just fucking a bit weird.
I love weird ones.
And I chose this. I think you'll be able to figure out why I chose this story when I get to that part. So if there's a part where you're like, this is why she picked it. Just see if you can figure that out and let me know.
All right. I'll put my thinking cap on.
So this is the story of the I-70 strangler.
Okay.
So Herbert Richard Baumeister. I'm going to go with Baumeister.
Wow.
Yep. born 1947 and lives in Indianapolis. Which, just first off, the thing that really gets me, the capital of Indiana is Indianapolis. And I just find that very annoying.
That's very infuriating.
Yes. And I feel like whoever it was named after or whoever named it is a bit up themselves to also call the same Indianapolis. I don't know. It's just that it's the polis at the end.
It would be like in Australia if we had like Australia and then the capital was Australiopolis.
Yeah. Astropolis. Well, it just makes me think of Metropolis from Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it doesn't sound like a real place. This is totally irrelevant. Anyway, I'll keep going. I'm not even a sentence in. Okay. So, by all accounts, it's a regular upbringing. He's the eldest of four, and the family is stable and affluent.
Mm-hmm.
When Herbert reaches his teenage years, though, he begins to change.
Mm-mm.
He develops a very morbid and very gruesome sense of humor. Classmates and teachers report that he begins to show a too keen interest in dead animals and terrorizing his teachers. Some of the rumors include Baumeister bringing a dead crow he had found and leaving it on his teacher's desk for them to find. And another circulates of him urinating on a teacher's desk.
Sounds side like note, a little shit.
Yeah. Side note, when I first read that sentence, I thought it was dead cow.
That would be a lot harder. Yeah. I would be like...
I'd be way more impressed.
Exactly. I'd be horrified, but I would also be like, good work.
How did you get this in here?
Yeah. Did you have a crane or like...
Just a big wheelbarrow. Thankfully, his teachers do the right thing and they reach out to the parents not for punishment, but rather for help.
Yeah.
Baumeister is sent to a psychiatrist and is diagnosed with schizophrenia. I did also read in two places that he was diagnosed with multiple personality disorder.
Right.
But I think that was just an outdated kind of version of schizophrenia and that he had, rather than like dissociative identities.
Yeah.
It was more just like he was schizophrenic in one way. Mm-hmm. And then he acted as a totally different person the other way, but it's not like they were different people.
Right, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I couldn't find out that had been confirmed anywhere else.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know if that's right. Yeah, but then again, it's also like the 60s, so.
Well, yeah, during that time they were like, oh, well, we know schizophrenia has voices in their head, but maybe they're different people and the personality's fragmented, so like we'll just give them both.
Yeah, so... I think nowadays they talk it was definitely schizophrenia and not DID. So,
okay.
This is about as far as his medical treatment goes. So he gets a diagnosis but receives no treatment or therapy for his condition, which is kind of insane because his dad's a doctor.
That sounds very counterintuitive.
Yeah. So they know what's wrong. They're just not going to do anything about it.
Oh, gosh.
Instead, Baumeister continues to go to high school. His grades are steady, but socially he's super isolated. Mm-hmm. He focuses on becoming part of the popular kids, which in this case it was the jocks, but he's just repeatedly rejected. So he spends pretty much all of high school by himself.
Uh-oh.
1965, he attends Indiana University. He isn't very well received by others. I wonder why.
Yep.
And he drops out in his first semester.
Okay.
2 years later, his father pressures him into returning. He does. And he begins to study anatomy.
Uh-oh.
During his studies, Baumeister meets Juliana Sater. Somehow, they have a lot in common. This includes their extremely conservative beliefs and that they wanted to one day own their own business. But Baumeister drops out again before the semester is up.
Okay.
1971, Baumeister and Juliana marry. So they dated for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
Takes all types.
Yep. And 6 months into their marriage, something happens. It's sort of unconfirmed what actually happened, but Baumeister's father commits him to a mental health institution for the next 2 months.
Right.
On his return, nothing in his marriage is noticeably different. They just go right back to normal.
Okay.
Sure.
Sounds like love.
She seems pretty flexible to me.
She's like, no worries. Welcome back.
Yeah. Baumeister begins working for the Indianapolis Star, so the local newspaper, as a copy boy. It's a super entry-level position his father pulled strings to help him get. So it's kind of like running notes between different journalists and, mm-hmm. you know, just an errand boy, essentially.
Yeah. Busy work.
Yeah. Once again, Baumeister is eager to be one of the popular kids. His constant need for attention, recognition, and acceptance irritated his bosses and co-workers to the point that he left the position simply because he felt like he was a nobody.
Oh.
So... I mean, if you're going to constantly ask for praise, people are going to start to get annoyed at you.
Yeah. I mean, he clearly has such a complex about it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
He moved on to another entry-level position, and this is at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, which sounds, I don't know. It sounds like it should be sort of spy-y, but it's really not.
Sounds like the DMV.
Yeah. Yeah. This time, though, he wasn't planning on earning affection, respect, or belonging, but instead demanded it and acted as if he was already the boss.
It's a choice.
Yeah. He was aggressive, bossy, rude, and often cruel to his co-workers.
Oh, no.
Somehow, he was able to stay in this job for 10 years. I don't know how that works.
Wow.
He had little to no relationship with his co-workers, but was eventually promoted. Within a year... of his promotion, he was fired.
Wow.
he had been caught urinating on a letter addressed to the governor of Indiana at the time, an action that confirmed rumors that he was the one responsible for urine found on his manager's desk just months prior.
This dude's just peeing everywhere.
He has a bit of a pissy problem.
Oh, boy.
During his time at the BMV, which is still really funny, every time I read that, I just read Bullet for My Valentine.
Ah, no, I just thought it was funny because it had BM in it. It's like the shorthand for bowel movement in nursing.
Okay. Anyway, Baumeister and Juliana have three children while he's working this job.
Wow.
Once he loses his job, he becomes a stay-at-home father because of his inability to find a new one.
Due to being very unlikable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Unknown to his wife, Baumeister also begins to drink a lot and starts hanging out at Indianapolis gay bars.
Okay.
I know, it's a bit of a turn.
Yep. This is a case where I actually have no idea where we're going with this. I'm just like, okay, all right.
I feel like there's a part, the part that I really like, and the reason I picked this story, I feel like is quite memorable.
Mm.
I didn't remember any of this other stuff except for this one thing.
Okay.
And I have a feeling it might happen to you too.
Right. Yeah, I'm still trying to, like, the title was really familiar, but I'm like, I don't remember.
Well, there's actually like four different, so the I-70 pretty much goes across the whole states.
Is that the one that's really notorious for human trafficking?
I have no idea, but I know there's at least three different I-70 murderers.
Right.
But okay. This one's not the I-70 killer. He's the I-70 strangler.
Okay.
There's a shooter. There's something else. And then I think there's just killer.
Right. Okay.
So, because it goes pretty much right across the Midwest.
Right. Okay.
So it goes through all of like the flyover states.
That's probably why it's notorious, because you've got all different places you can go to take bodies.
Yeah. And it's really long.
Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah. So, that's why I was very specific to say strangler, because I know there's another one, the I-70, I think he's the I-70 shooter, has never been caught.
Right.
But he just shot a bunch of like random women across, I don't know, maybe I'll do that another time.
Okay.
1985, Baumeister is arrested and charged with a drunken hit and run, but is released. Later in the year, he's also arrested and charged for stealing a friend's car, but is let go again. So he keeps getting off.
Right.
Eventually, he began a job at a thrift store and decided that opening his own would be a great way to make a profit.
Okay.
After borrowing $4,000 from his mother in 1988, Baumeister and his wife opened their very first Save-A-Lot. And within three years, they were basically rich.
Oh.
Baumeister became a well-respected man in the community who gave a lot to charities. Not long into owning the business, he begins treating Juliana as an employee, often scolding her for no reason, and she takes a backseat on all things business.
Man, she stayed with you for years. Like, yeah. I'd be treating her better than that if I were you.
Yeah. In 1991, the Baumeisters buy their dream home, an 18-acre Tudor-style ranch named Fox Hollow Farms.
That's very cool.
It is. The property is extravagant. It has its own horse stable and indoor pool. The family is meticulous about the appearance of both their home and their stores. But Baumeister's marriage is beginning to crumble further and further.
Mm-hmm.
The couple separate and get back together multiple times. And after a while, the home begins to fall apart.
Uh-oh.
The grounds become overgrown, the rooms inside are a mess, and keeping up appearances at home is now a low priority. Except for one area.
Mm-hmm.
The only area in the home that Baumeister himself actually cares about was the pool house. He keeps the bar stocked, the pool clean and functioning, and his lavish pool party set up at all times.
Yep.
Do you know where I'm going?
Yeah, I do.
The pool party includes decorations, lights, music, and a guest list compromised of dressed and ready to party mannequins.
Yep.
This is why I picked this story.
Ding, 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 ding.
So the weirdness of this is just one of the reasons that Juliana and the kids mostly stay with their mother at Lake Wawasee.
I think that's a wise decision, personally.
Fucking yeah. Right?
It's like, Mommy, why does Daddy have a weird collection of mannequins? We're just not going to talk about it, okay? Just don't bring it up.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Oh, goodness.
But, like, they're wearing, like, Hawaiian shirts and have, like, pool floaties and drinks in their hand and shit.
I mean, when you can't make friends with regular humans, you've got to make your own friends.
That's so terrifying.
It's horrifying.
I want to know if he talked to them. He probably did.
I bet he did, yeah.
Yeah.
I bet he, like, ordered them around too and was like, oi, don't you do that. I'm the boss here.
I bet he did too. So in 1994, the business begins to lose money and bills are piling up.
Mm-hmm.
Baumeister begins more openly day drinking. He becomes more volatile and rude to customers and employees, and the store's upkeep and image begin to decline.
Mm-hmm.
At night, Baumeister would go out and cruise gay bars. Often afterwards, he would come home to his pool party and wail and cry about his failing business.
That's very sad in a very creepy way.
But also, maybe if you weren't such a dick to people, then you'd probably be fine.
Yeah, pretty much.
If you also, you opened 3 stores within 3 years. I don't think that's smart.
Yeah. I think, also, you know, even if you just stop peeing on stuff. Like,
that's a good point. Stop pissing on people and they'll like you more.
Exactly.
That same year, so 1994, their 13-year-old son, Eric, was playing in the wooded area behind the ranch. So it's like 18 acres, so it's fucking huge.
Yeah.
When he found a partially buried skeleton.
Uh-oh.
Eric brought the skull back to the house to show his mum. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
When Juliana brought her concerns to Baumeister, he explains that it's an old medical research skeleton of his father's he found in a box in the garage, and so he buried it to get rid of it.
Likely story.
She goes, all right, fair enough. Sure.
I don't think she wanted to investigate. His dad was
an anesthetist? Anesthesiologist?
Right. Why would he have a skull?
I don't know. Why would he have a skeleton?
Yeah, that's not typical. Plus,
he wasn't a teacher.
And when you study anatomy, they don't let you
take... You can't knock out a skeleton.
No, they don't let you take the bits home. Like, think...
They might have been the 60s. Before that, 30s.
Before that, maybe. But... No, I'm
also, who leaves a full skeleton in a box? You display that shit. That's cool.
Yeah, you put it in, like, a nice glass cabinet and you give it a name. Like,
yeah, Gary. Yeah. He's got a name tag and glasses on.
Yeah, you gotta be normal. Jesus.
And, a science coat. He's got a lab coat on.
I always... You know what? Like, I know that... I theoretically know that the skeletons in the science room were always fake, but I always stared at them really intensely, being like...
I don't trust you.
But what if?
Look at the science teacher and you're like, who's that?
He's like, has anyone actually checked the source of that skeleton? Just saying.
So that same year, Virgil Vandegrift, an ex-county sheriff and now private missing persons investigator, I knew that was going to be a hard sentence,
yep,
receives an interesting call. 28-year-old Alan Broussard is reported missing by his mother. Alan was last seen on his way to meet his boyfriend at a popular gay bar called Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
A week later, Vandegrift receives another call from a concerned mother. Roger Goodlett had left home to go to a gay bar and vanished on his way. Vandegrift begins to hand out flyers, do interviews, and explore the gay scene in Indianapolis, since this is the only thing that the two had in common.
Yeah.
He finds that Roger had last been seen getting into a blue vehicle with Ohio state plates.
Wonder what car our mannequin dude drives. I'm just wondering.
Can you imagine if it's just got mannequins in the passenger seat? Sorry. That's a sign. Don't get in a car with mannequins.
Mm-mm. Just run. Ugh. Just don't do it.
One more call would set Vandegrift off on a hunt. A publisher of a popular gay magazine had called to talk about several gay men that had disappeared over the last few years. Vandegrift takes this concern to the police, who brush it off, saying that the men had all likely run off to enjoy their gay lifestyles.
Yeah, because apparently being gay means going missing is fine.
Yeah. And that they likely weren't related to the I-70 murders at all.
Oh.
This is the first time Vandegrift hears of the I-70 murders.
Like, sorry, he's like,
that's not what I said, but what? So an investigation that had opened up in 1989 and closed over 4 years earlier to that in the mid-90s. So it was only open for like a year and a bit.
Right.
Right. The four of whom were gay men who had been strangled and dumped along the Interstate 70.
Now, there are a few, like I said before, there are a few I-70 serial killings, but this one is specifically along the Ohio and Indiana state route.
Okay.
It would be weeks into the investigation when Vandegrift is contacted by a man who said he was sure he had met with the killer and escaped.
Oh, here we go.
This man, who goes unnamed, we'll call him John.
Okay.
I saw a bunch of different names in different articles. I didn't like any of them, so I'm going to call him John.
Hey, John.
It tells a story of being at a gay club when he noticed another man who was overly interested in the missing persons flyers that featured Roger Goodlett. John decides to engage the man. Smart. thinking he would know something, which is so brave, but also terrifying.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't do that personally.
No.
Just saying.
No.
Maybe tell the police.
The police don't care.
True. Maybe in a group, like a group of you.
Get a posse.
Yeah.
John decides to engage the man thinking he might know something. The man introduces himself as Brian Smart from Ohio. When John asks Smart about the missing friend, he becomes evasive. Smart invites him to join him for a swim at the home he was currently landscaping for. John agrees and hops into Smart's Ohio-plated Buick.
I don't like that they're going for a swim.
Me either. John tried to take note of where he is, but he gets only very vague details. He's really not familiar with, like, northern Indianapolis. He doesn't really know where he's going. He gets, like, little bits, like he sees the word farm on the driveway entrance, a sort of fence, but he can't really remember anything or pick anything up. It's too dark and it's out in the middle of nowhere.
That's two flags for me.
Yeah. When they arrive to the property, John describes it as a large Tudor-style home filled with haphazard furniture and boxes. When John enters the pool area, he finds himself in a Mannequins Gone Wild setup.
Knew it. I knew it. Mannequins Gone Wild.
Isn't it good? I molded it and everything. I want to put it on a shirt.
Oh, we need to draw something for that too, just to give a visual.
What is the Babes Gone Wild like? You know, there's the girl, oh, know the Girls Gone Wild like videos.
I don't know what the logo is, but
I want to change it to Mannequins Gone Wild.
They just get their arms up and they're just like, woo.
Once, can you imagine if you could, I mean, obviously this isn't what happened, but if you could, like, pose a mannequin, like, mid-air so that it would look like it was about to, like, do a bummy into the pool, like, or something, like, really fucking elaborate.
Yeah. Also,
I doubt they were very elaborate. Like, I'm sure they were just all standing around and, like, lying down and shit, but I want one, like, mid-air about to do a somersault or something.
Yeah, I want, like, some reclining on a sun lounge. I want some with, like, big hats, some, like, doing backstroke in the pool.
I want a one in the corner doing body shots off another one.
Oh, there's the logo right there.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Also, that's the title for this episode, Mannequins Gone Wild.
Yes. Okay. Fuck, I need to write it down before I forget.
Yep, write it down. Okay.
John declines a drink from Smart. Smart.
Smart.
and then Smart excuses himself. When he returns, he's a lot more talkative, which John thinks that he likely took off to go and snort cocaine and come back.
Yeah.
At some point during the conversation, Smart brings up autoerotic asphyxiation.
Normal.
How do you get to that? And also, why is he still there in the mannequin pool room?
Yeah.
Why is he at the mannequin party? I don't understand.
See, I was actually just thinking, I've totally had conversations with my friends about weird topics like that, but they have not taken place in a pool room full of mannequins.
But they're also your friends. Good point. Not somebody you've just met who's brought you back to a partially abandoned house that's just with a mannequin pool party happening.
Yeah, I can't say I've ever done that.
I would be very concerned if you had.
Thank you.
So they end up talking about autoerotic asphyxiation, and John and Smart asked John to choke him.
Right.
John does this while Smart masturbates.
Ugh.
Smart offers to return the favor, and John accepts.
Why? You're in a mannequin pool room, dude. This is not going to end well.
During the event, John begins to panic when Smart refuses to let up.
Didn't see that one coming.
John passes out, or at least it looks like he does. Smart removes the hose he was using, and John opens his eyes. So John faked passing out to get him to stop.
It's clever.
It is clever.
Yeah.
This startles Smart, but he claims he's panicked because of John passing out. So when he was actually shocked about the fact that he woke up, he was pretending to be shocked about the fact that he passed out.
Yeah, he was like, oh my God. Oh, shit. You passed out, man. That's wild.
So investigators end up like later thinking that because John is a much bigger guy than Smart, it was likely that it would have taken a lot more to actually knock him out, but also the fact that he didn't take a drink from him, which likely would have been drugged,
yeah,
is the reason he survived.
Yeah, it actually, I found this out from like many documentaries that it takes a lot of effort to actually strangle someone and like choke him out and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is concerning. It's a good thing, but it's also like, you know, sidetrack. You know that whole argument in court where people are like, oh no, like she died from like a sex game gone wrong?
Yeah.
Bullshit. Because it takes so long to actually.
You have to hold on for a lot longer.
Yeah. And she's going to be like freaking out and be like, oh my God. And you're just like, nah, sex game, babe. It's like, no, that did not happen.
Yeah, what's the safe word? Oh, sorry, I can't breathe or say it.
Yeah, like by the time you're losing consciousness, it's been several minutes of you like holding that. Like, no, sorry, don't buy it.
Yeah, for sure. So Smart drives John back to Indianapolis and they agree to a second date in a week's time. John and Vandegrift work together to lay a trap for Smart, but he never shows up to the second date.
Yeah, didn't think he would.
Vandegrift is able to pull a string in the missing persons unit of the local police and get John on a ride-along with Mary Wilson to look around northern Indianapolis to try and find the home, but they're completely unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm.
A year later,
in
1996, John is back at the same bar for a night out when he again runs into Smart. This time he takes down the number plate.
Well done.
And delivers it to Wilson.
Good work, John.
Wilson now knows that their suspected serial killer is Herbert Baumeister.
Knew it. No one with that many mannequins is not a murderer.
Wilson will go through Baumeister himself for permission to search his property. He refuses and directs her to his lawyer.
Right.
Which, ballsy. She walks up to him and straight up goes, you're a suspect in a murder investigation. Let me search your house.
Yeah, ballsy. Also interesting.
He goes, nah.
I mean, he already has a lawyer on retainer. That's a bit interesting.
Yeah, true. I mean, people can just say that. He might not have actually had one yet.
True.
But then again, he's separated with his wife so many times. Yeah. He might
just contact the family lawyer.
I wonder if that's the same lawyer that got him off those other charges. Maybe. Wilson then tries Juliana, who, even after everything, weird actions, the separations, the emotional abuse, also refuses to let her search the house.
God damn it.
Wilson moves on to try and get a search warrant, but is denied by lack of sufficient evidence.
Yeah, they've got one dude going, that's the house. That's probably not enough.
Yeah. Over the next 6 months, Baumeister suffers an emotional breakdown. I wonder why.
Curious.
The Children's Bureau that was receiving donations from the Save-A-Lot, because it was a thrift store, so part of the money went to a charity and the rest went into Baumeister's pocket.
Right.
They cancelled their contract with the family and the business. So they were now facing bankruptcy. So, like, he was so erratic and dysfunctional that a charity said, we don't want your money anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of a lot.
Yeah.
It's a charity.
Yeah. Thinking back over the discovery of the skull in their backyard and all the things Wilson had told her she suspected Baumeister of, Juliana hatches a plan to divorce him and let Wilson search Fox Hollow.
Okay.
Baumeister was at his mother's with Eric, so Juliana picks up the phone and calls her lawyer. June 24th, 1996, Wilson and three others stepped off the Baumeister's patio where they immediately noticed an area where the children had been playing with pebbles. Pebbles that turned out to be human bone fragments.
Oh, that's dark.
Yep. Police excavate the property the next day and some of the neighbor's property because 18 acres apparently isn't enough. And the early search finds 5,500 bone fragments and teeth.
That's going to be a hell of a job.
Forensics estimate that the remains belong to about 11 different men.
Damn.
Yeah. Unfortunately, at the time, only four could be identified.
Oh, that's sad.
So those were Roger Goodlett,
mm-hmm.
who was 34, Stephen Hale, who was 26, Richard Hamilton, who is 20, and Manuel, I think it's Resendez,
mm-hmm.
I think, sorry, 31.
Okay.
Thankfully, authorities are able to serve Baumeister custody papers to have him immediately release Eric to Juliana before he could know he was done for.
Okay.
So under the guise of the fact that it was just a divorce thing, mm-hmm. they served it and said you have to return him straight away because they knew that once he knew he was done for, he would likely hurt the kid.
Yeah.
The handover is easy. Baumeister just thinks it's some like legal power play for the divorce.
But yeah, he's like, a custody
thing. He's like, yeah, sure, whatever. I'll get him back. We keep getting back together. I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Psych.
Yeah. The news of the bones at Fox Hollow Farm hit the media and immediately Baumeister vanishes.
Shit.
Within the week, Baumeister's car is discovered nearly 400 miles away in Pinery Park, Ontario. Baumeister was inside with a note and he had shot himself in the head.
I mean, did they not predict this, though?
I don't know why they served him with the papers and didn't just grab him.
Well, exactly. Like, I mean, if they have enough to, you know, search the property and they're getting all this stuff lined up, like, surely they'd have enough to at least question him.
Because he was found a week later.
Well, even if they couldn't arrest him at that time, like, wouldn't they put...
Can't they hold him on suspicion of something?
I think there's a limit of, like, two, three days or something. For suspicion or something.
But even then, they'd already searched the property. They'd searched the property before they served him with the warrant to give the kid back.
Well, yeah, but also what I'm thinking is, like, even if they theoretically, for some reason, couldn't bring him in for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Wouldn't they have, like, a car
somebody
station,
watching him?
You know, yeah. Put him on, like, watch or something? I don't know.
Yeah. Ugh. I mean, early 90s, man.
Damn it.
His suicide note is 3 pages long of ramblings about his failed business and his failed marriage.
So all about him.
He doesn't mention a single thing about any murders, bones, or any crime whatsoever.
Well, I mean, that makes sense for his psychology because his real shame is his rejection from society, not the murders. Because he's like, oh no, that's just fun for me. So his true life regrets at the time of suicide will be, oh, I failed my business. And, oh, I peed on people.
I hope that was in there. So Juliana is actually able to help the police figure out Baumeister's timeline for the I-70 murders.
Mm-hmm.
She has receipts and dates that match the murdered men's timeline and the fact that the bodies had stopped being discovered along the road when the family bought Fox Hollow.
Damn.
Official reports gauge the number of victims of up to 16. The ones that have been identified are Johnny Bayer, 20, Alan Broussard, 28, Roger Goodlett, I saw some say that he was 33 or 34.
Mm-hmm.
Richard D. Hamilton, who is 20. Stephen Hale, 26. Jeff Allen Jones, 31. Michael Kern, 46. And Manuel Resendez, 31.
That's really tragic. Yeah. And they're all young guys and met the wrong guy in a bar one night.
Yeah. And that is the story of the I-70 strangler.
Ugh.
You're welcome.
That was bad.
Good some mannequin party, though.
That's hilarious, but just, like, any other context.
I just feel like that. I just want to know, like, how many people saw that and just didn't do it. It's such a fucking weird thing.
Yeah, like, how many people went to that house, saw his setup, and were just like, oh, he's just, like, an eccentric dude. Like, it's fine. It's like, is it?
But imagine, the rest of the house is falling apart.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is, like, perfect.
Which makes it even weirder.
Yeah.
Like, if the whole house was pristine and it's like, yeah, it's just a weird mannequin room, you could be like, yeah, okay. But the fact that he put in so much love and care to it, like, did no one sit there and be like, we should address this?
I want to know how he just took the mannequins from the store. Yeah. Like, I know he owned it, but, like, did he say that he was going to move them to the other one? Or like, how do you just come home from the cuff? It's a Buick. Like, how do you bring that home, that many mannequins?
Oh, yeah, just, like, have, like, one. Maybe he just, like, wanted to use the carpool lane one day. So he just took one and was like, oh, I like this. And then he just kept doing it. I don't know.
That's so terrifying.
It really is. And I think, like, his crimes are horrific. But I think the mannequin thing just makes it that much weirder.
Imagine that being one of the last things you see.
Yeah. It's like...
like, as if you didn't walk in and be like, this is a red flag.
He's like, fuck no, I'm out of here.
Ugh. Anyway.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm going to have nightmares about mannequins now.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Not. okay, so for my story this week, it does tread a little bit on your true crime territory.
I'll fight you.
I'm going to be honest. But it then goes paranormally.
Cool.
So I bring it back.
I mean, I don't care.
Yeah, I know. If you literally said before, you're like, oh, if you want to just do a true crime case that you're just interested in, you can do it. And I'm like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
But no, this does have a...
if one day we do decide we want to swap just for an episode, I already know what I'm going to do.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, my story is a little bit true crimey, but I bring it back in the end, so it's fine. And the circumstances were just very, very weird, and it was kind of like a scary urban legend in a way.
Cool.
But yeah, so this takes place in 1942 in Pascagoula in Mississippi.
Bless you.
Thank you. A number of strange crimes took place late at night where locks of young girls' hair were mysteriously cut off while the girls slept.
Oh, I hate that.
Do you see why?
I would rather you stab me. Don't do literally, that.
Don't sneak into my room. It's still just a lock.
That's
my
so
hair.
Much more threatening.
Yeah, literally. But this happened a few times with the culprit disappearing into the night without a trace. Now, due to the creepy nighttime hairdressing, the culprit...
I know. How good was that?
She's writing it down, guys.
Keep going.
So, due to the creepy nighttime hairdressing, the culprit was given the name the Phantom Barber of Pascagoula. Yep.
There's a nocturnal hairdresser that's called the Phantom.
Yeah, the Phantom Barber of Pascagoula.
Okay.
Yeah. So, the first victim of the Phantom Barber was Mary Evelyn Briggs. Yeah.
You're going to say it all the time, aren't you?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Now, she was sharing a room with another young girl called Edna Marie Heidel at the Our Lady of Victory's convent.
Ew.
So they were little roomies in a convent.
None friends.
Yeah. Mary actually woke up in time to see the perpetrator, and she describes the attack in a newspaper article. She says, I saw the figure of a kind of a short, fat man bending over me with something shiny in his hands and falling with my hair. When he saw me open my eyes, he said, shh.
No!
Yep. I yelled. He jumped out the window. Nightmare fuel. Yep.
Why do I imagine it's Danny DeVito? Sorry.
If they ever make a biopic,
mm-hmm.
We've just cast it. Now, some reports say that Edna was left unsheared by the barber and left with her own long locks. But others say that she had an involuntary haircut as well. But I couldn't confirm this either way. Like, half the article said that she had a haircut too. Others didn't. The second victim was attacked only a few days later and was a 6-year-old girl by the name of Carol Petey. She woke up to find that most of her hair had been cut off. But what's really weird is that she was sleeping next to her twin brother at the time and neither of them saw anything.
Ooh.
They didn't wake up. They didn't see anyone come in or leave. But most of her hair was gone. Just chop, chop, chop.
Most of her hair?
Yeah. So there's a picture of the first two girls and you can see like a whole side of it is just lobbed off. But the rest of it is fine. But from what...
So it's not just like a lock as in like a keepsake. It's like
I'm chopping bits off.
I'm trying to take part of like your femininity or something away.
Yeah. Or it's like I want a big keepsake or something. Like it's decent bits and
I'm going to make a wig.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Very creepy. It didn't say specifically how much had been cut off, but every report was like most of her hair was gone. But it was still like chopped off, so it wasn't shaved or anything.
I just wrote down Danny DeVito, the wig maker. Sorry.
You said it and we're talking about it, so it must be true. But yeah, neither child saw any trace of anything. They didn't see them coming or going. Now, the fourth victim, and I haven't made a mistake, I'm skipping the third one. I'm talking about the fourth and we're going to come back to it. And there's a reason for it.
I had an issue there for a second. I'm glad you...
I was like, I'm going to have
to... I'm glad you addressed that.
Yes. So the fourth victim was a woman named Mrs. Taylor. And once again, she awoke to see that 2 inches of her hair had been taken off during the night. She also didn't see anything, but she noted that when she woke up, she was feeling really ill when she first awoke.
2 inches is really just kind of like a normal trim.
I don't think about that much.
Still, I feel like... Oh, my hair's... Yours is in a ponytail. You'd probably do it better.
Kind of that much?
Yeah.
I mean, that much off the ends is
It feels
fine.
Like he's very inconsistent.
Yeah. He's just taking bits, basically, which is really weird. But yeah, so she noted that she felt really ill when she woke up, which led the police to come up with a theory that maybe he used chloroform on his victims to kind of knock them out. But again, I mean,
how did the others wake up so quickly?
Exactly. You know. Now, these victims, none of them were physically harmed. So they weren't, like, sexually attacked. They weren't physically attacked. They were fine. Just their hair was cut. And whoever the phantom was left behind absolutely no evidence apart from the window screens were slashed. And that was thought how he was getting in and out. And at one crime scene, which was Carol's, there was a single sandy footprint. But it was so vague that they couldn't really identify it as anything.
Danny DeVito's been to the beach.
Yep. Which is a little creepy.
Or he's the Sandman. Oh, that's worse. Oh,
nope.
Sorry.
We can't go there.
Shouldn't have done that.
So yeah, they just really had nothing. There was no evidence or anything. Now, a little note on society before we keep going. So during the time of the attacks, obviously because these are taking place in 1942, World War II was raging at this time. And Pascagoula at the time, or before the war happened, was a really small fishing town. It had about 5,000 people. Ashley's eating chocolate and she's trying to do it so slow.
I was trying to be sneaky. I didn't want.
It's all right. We endorse snacks on this podcast.
I didn't know if it was going to be still hard and loud or not.
No, it's quite warm today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Pascagoula was like this small fishing town. It had like 5,000 residents, but during the war, it like blew up to about 15,000 residents.
Jesus.
Because the town was now repurposed for the construction of warships, like because of positioning, it was just convenient. Because of the war and because of the increased population of strangers, the local people and law enforcement alike were incredibly on edge. So crime had increased, but it was mostly things like brawls and like thefts and things like that. But the strain on resources meant that everything was crazy.
Yeah.
And the locals of Pascagoula, they were already in a state of panic and uproar because there's strange people now. There's more people needing, you know, food and supplies and stuff.
Plus it's wartime. People are nuts.
Yep. Wartime is just crazy. So when these crimes started up, it just made the whole situation worse. And residents put a lot of pressure on law enforcement to solve it. They were like, we're not safe. What are you doing? Why haven't you caught this guy? So it was just a really crazy time for this town.
I feel like it would be so hard to catch somebody who's not doing anything like, I know it sounds weird, but like he's not doing anything huge. Like he's not killing people.
No, he's not.
So there's like, it's just, that's such a weird thing to do.
It's like a double-edged sword because it's like the police are like, look, we're going to try, but we're also doing a lot because it's the war. But then people are like, it's the war and we're freaking out. You need to do something about this now because we're even more unsafe.
Yeah. And also the police are at the same time like, he hasn't actually hurt anybody yet. He's just a fucking, like, peeping Tom that's a bit extra. Yeah. Like,
he's taking your hair, guys. Say thank you for the haircut, okay? No, don't say that. But yeah, people basically went nuts. So like everyone's going out and buying guns. Everyone's trying to use it. People stop going out at night. If they do, they're all in pairs. But the police end up offering a $300 reward for any information that leads to the capturing of the Phantom Barber, which in this day would be about $4,814.39. So it was not a lot of money, but again,
that was so specific.
Well,
when I did my today's money conversions, I'm like, about this. You're like, I'm 13 cents.
Yeah. I was like, yep, that's what it's worth. So yeah, not a whole lot
of money.
Is
that a US or Australian? Thank you very much.
That was US.
What's that in Australian? Didn't do your research.
Well, no, because it takes place in the US.
I always change it for us. I don't know why most of our listeners are American.
Yeah, I'm being considerate.
I think I change it so that I understand how much that actually is, because I don't know what that would buy in America.
Okay. Yeah, you could buy, like, some really nice handbags.
I just have no sense of foreign currency that's American.
I just kind of halve it and then add a bit. So it's like...
Really?
Yeah.
How much? Hold on. I just want to, for my peace of mind, how much was it?
$4,814.39.
$6,247.90.
Okay. It's... Nothing to sneeze at, but it's not like, you know, $100,000.
I think that's a decent chunk. Yeah.
So yeah, basically everyone was nuts. That's basically my point there. Yeah. Something to keep in mind. Now we're going to get back to the third attack. So This was linked to the Phantom, but I deliberately separated it out because it's completely different to every other crime.
Oh.
So this took place between Carol Petey, who was the six-year-old, and Mrs. Taylor. So it's in between those two times. It was just far more brutal than the other crimes, and no hair was taken.
Oh.
Yeah. So basically what happened was Mr. and Mrs. Heidelberg, which I just think of Heidelberg, which is a suburb here.
Yeah.
So this couple, they were sleeping in their bed at home when their house was invaded and the couple was bludgeoned with an iron pipe.
That's so out of character.
Completely different. Again, no hair was taken, but the attack was very brutal and Mrs. Heidelberg lost her front teeth and both were rendered unconscious.
Oof.
Neither of the pair saw anything because they did live. Yeah.
Wow. I just realized I made a face at Laura. This is an audio medium. I didn't make a noise. Eyebrow noise.
Yeah, eyebrow noises.
My eyebrows went up and my eyes went up.
Imagine if you could hear like, whoosh, like that was the sound of your eyes.
I'm trying to blink on the microphone. It didn't work.
No. So yeah, the pair actually lived, but neither of them saw anything. They didn't see anyone coming in or going or anything. Following this attack, a team of bloodhounds was dispatched to the Heidelberg's home.
Puppies.
And they led out into some woods that were close by. They found a pair of gloves, but that was about it.
Fuck the woods.
Yep. Stay out of the woods, guys. The reason why this was linked to the barber was just because it had a similar MO in that a scream was cut. And so they were like, well, that's the barber.
Oh, yeah, because that's the only person that'll ever get into a house like that.
Yep. That's basically the only reason it was linked.
I don't like that.
Nope. I have a lot of thoughts on that, but we'll get to that in a second.
No hair was taken whatsoever.
No hair was taken.
Meh.
At all. See, like, I could understand it if he took hair and then bludged them. I'm like, okay, this is like an escalation. But yeah. No hair was taken at all.
Or if anything was remotely the same.
Yeah, no. Like, there wasn't even, like, another sandy footprint or something. Like, it was just that the screen was cut and it happened around the same time. That was it.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, okay. So, 2 months then go by and there's no further attacks. There's nothing else to report. But then, suddenly, an arrest is announced. So, a man by the name of William Dolan, who was a 57-year-old chemist, was publicly named as the Phantom Barber after a lock of hair belonging to Carol Petey was found out of the back of his home. So it wasn't in his home at all. It was out the back of it.
As in like his backyard or in like an alleyway?
I'm not sure. I couldn't find pictures of the house, but I'm guessing it's kind of just like behind the back of his house somehow. It didn't mention backyards. It didn't mention like footpaths or garden beds. It was just out the back of it. The only other evidence they had was that he had been going through a disagreement with the Heidelbergs. So they had some sort of local court matter. I couldn't find details on this either, but they had a disagreement. So they were like, well, that's motive for murder or attempted murder. So Dolan was never charged for the other home invasions. Like, he was never charged for the haircutting, anything like that. He was only charged with 2 attempted murders. He was found guilty and he was sentenced to 10 years in prison, which that was the only
thing. I mean, surely they had enough evidence to get him on the murders.
Well, all they basically said was like, well, he had a disagreement with them. So that's motive. We found the hair out the back. Done.
To an unrelated crime.
You know,
okay, sure. Fine.
Wash your hands of it.
Well done, coppers.
Yeah. In the eyes of the public as well, Dolan was definitely guilty because he was a known German sympathizer because he studied in Germany. And it mentioned that he was possibly a Nazi sympathizer, but this was like, again,
50-50. One of my best friends is German. I'm not a Nazi.
Exactly. I'm like, there's German sympathizers and then there's Nazi sympathizers. They're 2 different things, guys. But again, the only reason for this was that he studied in Germany. So it's not like he's parading through the streets being like, yay, Hitler or something. Like, he didn't really do anything like that. But, obviously, during the wartime, when everyone was a flupinana, they thought that his imprisonment was just because of that.
Yeah.
They were like, well, he likes Germany, so...
Near enough is good enough.
Exactly. During Dolan's sentence, so we get 6 years in, the governor at the time for Mississippi, called Fielding Wright, decided to review the case in its entirety, and he insisted that Dolan take a lie detector test. He passed the test, and with that result, as well as the lack of evidence, he was set free.
Okay.
with a limited suspended sentence, but he was essentially let go. Modern investigators have then gone back and looked at the case as well, and they think that it's even more uncertain that Dolan ever did anything. This was because it was super easy for the hair to have actually been planted, because it's not like it was in a drawer in his house or anything. It was just down the back of it. It was also sent away to the FBI to be identified as the young girl's hair, which they were like, this could have been, you know, messed with at any point. They were just like, this is really not solid.
And if it's hair that's been cut off, like, when was it? Sorry, what year? World War II, right?
Yeah, it started in 1942.
So DNA is not a thing.
No. So you haven't even got a hair root or anything.
They're guessing.
Yeah, they're like, well, same color. Yep.
Okay.
So it's like...
Could be from a golden fucking retriever.
It could be. Or like someone just lobs some hair off their daughter and being like, look, it's the barber.
then you see a cop's child running around with a big bald patch on the back of it.
Yeah, literally. All of a sudden this child has
ignore that. No, that's nothing.
That's unrelated.
It's inconsequential. Please leave.
Exactly. So yeah, modern investigators are very much like his... prosecution was basically due to panic at the time and the fact that it was the war and he studied in Germany, so they were like, let's just throw him in prison. Not very sturdy, we can say. In an interesting note as well, I've only been able to find information on these four cases, but in a lot of newspaper articles they say that the barber had 10 houses he broke into, but I couldn't find any details on them. There were no additional names, there was no other reports. Every article I found was just these four cases, and then you see like news clippings and they're like, oh yeah, he's broken into 10 different locations, which I'm
weird.
Like, that's very weird. So yeah, I had to put that in there, but again, frustrating because I don't know what the other six crimes were. But to this day, the mystery of the Phantom Barber has never been solved. And the reason that this tale became so spooky is that many people believe the barber himself was some sort of creature or demon just due to the sheer lack of evidence he ever left. It's also interesting that when you Google this crime, all of these illustrations pop up, and it's very like Southern Gothic. So these creatures have like big elongated features and demon faces and devilish faces. So if you want to have a Google, they look pretty creepy. But they're also like humanoid creatures. So, you know, this is kind of escalated into like an urban legend now. My personal theory, and one that is shared by many, is that the bludgeoning of the Heidelbergs was completely unrelated. I really don't think that was the barber. Just because he didn't take any hair.
Yeah, that seems like a real stretch.
Yeah.
The cops probably just didn't want to add panic to already panic if there's two... like criminals.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I really think someone had something against Heidelbergs. Could it have been Dolan? Maybe, but I don't know that part. Could have been someone else. But definitely in terms of the barber, I think it was someone or something else. My personal favorite is a weird hair-cutting demon, because I just find that very, very creepy. The idea that there's like some demon whose only purpose in life is to just trim your hair a little bit, just... I think that's weird. That's the one I like.
Were all of the girls? So obviously, ignore Mr. and Mrs.
Heidelberg.
Yeah. Were they all blonde girls?
Yes. So there were a couple of things that were.
So it's definitely like a sexual fetish thing without the escalation.
Yeah. If you want to go the crime route, the biggest theory is some sort of sexual motive. So they found no like semen anywhere. They found no evidence of assaults, nothing like that. Like everyone was clothed when they were found.
Yeah.
It was literally just the hair was gone. Which also kind of makes the Dolan case a little bit more less likely, because if they found one bit of hair out the back of his house.
Where's the rest of it?
Yeah. And they would have searched his house.
And also if somebody went to all the effort to sneak into someone's room, potentially knock them out, to then cut hair, why would they just leave it in their backyard or whatever?
Exactly. Like if you have that kind of sexual fetish, they would be like your prized possession.
Also, I was thinking about the girl that woke up.
Yep.
And then the next one was the little girl.
Yep.
And then the next older woman felt sick.
Yeah.
Maybe they decided to knock them out. They didn't need to knock out the little girl because kids sleep like the dead anyway. And then he was like, oh, I should probably use something to knock this one out so that she doesn't wake up like the last one did.
Yeah. Well, because the other thing I was thinking was she claims that she felt sick in the morning, but I'm also like, lots of people feel sick in the morning for no reason.
It also could just be nerves, the fact that you know somebody was in your room.
Yeah, and also being like, where the fuck's my hair? Like, that would make me feel sick. So, I don't know how much merit I put into the whole chloroform thing. Possible, sure. But, yeah, I don't know.
It's a bit extra.
It is a bit extra.
I mean, you'd be in and out in, what, 5 minutes?
Yeah. You're just like...
You'd add on an extra couple of minutes if you were going to drug them.
Plus, like, a lot of these... There was another one, too. Well, the first one, the girl had her roommate in there. The second one, the girl had a twin brother in the bed. And then apparently with the Mrs. Taylor... Again, this was in half the articles, which is why I left it out. But there were claims that she was in a room with, I think it was, like, her husband and her two children. So there were always other people in the room, which I'm just like, they didn't wake up either. Like, unless you go around and speed chloroform everybody... Yeah. Before anybody wakes up, I'd be like, okay, yeah, but that's going to be hard to do.
Yeah, it's probably just easier to just sneak in, cut and go.
Exactly. But, yeah, definitely very, very creepy.
Pair that with the mannequins.
We really turned up the creep factor on this
we
one.
We did. You're welcome.
But, yeah, so that's pretty much the story of the Phantom Barber of Pascagoula. Like I said, never been solved. Technically still open, but like, who's going to investigate it now? So yeah,
that's so weird.
It's just so weird. When I read about it, I was like, look, I'm like, this is not the most paranormal case, but I'm like, it's pretty freaking weird.
I hate it.
Yeah. It's just not comfortable to think about. You're like, I don't want to think about that too much.
Yeah,
but yeah,
just, it feels like so much more of a threat than just like actually going in and harming somebody.
Yeah, it's that whole thing of like,
I can come back at any time, yeah, kind of thing.
I've been in here once, I can do it again, and I just messed with you a little bit. That's fucked up.
I don't like that.
Just come in and kill me once, like, just do it quickly. I don't want to.
Or at least just steal some things and leave. Don't just cut my hair and run away. That doesn't make sense. Yeah. Take something of value, please.
Yeah, because then you can be like, oh,
please don't do that.
No. Well, this is not an invitation to commit crimes at our houses, okay? But no, it's like, well, if they just come in and steal some shit, you're like, oh, well, the motive was theft. Like, they didn't want to hurt me. But it's like, they're taking your hair.
Yeah.
And it's icky.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Mm-mm.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Should I do my recommendation station very quickly?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, so I have two. The first one was I watched season 7 of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it. Very, very funny. I was a little bit sad because it was only 13 episodes and not the usual, like, 23, 22 episodes.
Yeah.
But I, oh my God, I laughed so hard.
Yeah.
It was just, it was very funny. I won't spoil it for any fans that haven't watched it yet.
Do you see what I mean about the arc was a bit less arc-y now, though?
Yeah, one thing I was talking to my sister about was I was like, I feel like it was rushed because it was like it all went very quickly and they were jammed it together. And I was like, how many episodes was that? And it was only 13.
Yeah.
Which
when it's because Netflix owns it now instead of CW.
Yeah, and it's also coming to an end next season, so they kind of just got it back, and then they were like, well, now we have to end it. But like that being said, I thought they did a really good job considering that by like season 7, a lot of shows drop off and they get a bit shit.
Yeah.
So I thought it was so funny. I laughed the whole time. There's a few highlights that I really like, but I won't spoil it because I really enjoyed watching it myself. So that's my first one.
Yep.
Second one, I watched Bridgerton.
Oh, had you not already watched Bridgerton?
No. Oh. I'd been putting it off because I heard about a certain scene that I was like, I'm not going to like that. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I watched it like when I was at my mum's in December. So right, I'm trying to think.
It's episode 6 when she figures something out and then she goes for it.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck is episode 6? That doesn't help. I watched them all at once. It was one giant movie.
Yeah. I did it over about 2 days. But yeah, I loved it up until episode 6. And then everything after episode 6 was just ruined for me.
It was just so weird as well.
Yeah, it was just uncomfortable. What really bothered me too was that like the sex scenes in like episode 5 were fire. Like you're sitting there, you're like, yes, they're together. You're feeling great. It's hot. It's sexy. And then that happens in episode 6. And it
I feel like the
it.
Conflict was just so like... just so weird. Like,
I don't know why she was mad. Like, he should have been the bad one. But she's all like, oh, you lied to me. I'm like, he never lied to you.
I just feel like there were so many things that everybody, there's just so many things in that that was like,
yeah.
What?
For me, the best part of the series, okay, so looking at the guy was just very fun for me. Like, I found him very attractive. So that was a highlight.
I love the brother. The younger brother. The younger of the oldest brothers.
The one with the... the one that...
Colin.
Is that the one that goes with the girl who's the cousin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one that nice. The one that like almost gets tricked into thinking he's
yeah
yeah, the ginger chick from the bitchy yeah. mum family falls for.
That's right. Yeah. He's a bit of a
fuck.
Sweetheart.
I hate that woman.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I was like, please just fall down the fucking stairs.
Yeah. Oh.
Oopsie daisies.
Yeah. Actually, I think the best part in terms of like the plot was all the subplots. I really enjoyed those, like seeing what happens with all the siblings and the weird things that are just like going on and who's going to marry who. And
I think the next season follows Colin on his travels.
Oh, really?
I think they're going to. Yeah, because he left on the horse to go
he's
to
going
France like, or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think because that's when at the very end when she's in the carriage.
Yeah.
And she reveals who Lady Whistledown is.
Yeah.
She's on her way to Colin, apparently.
I was wondering what they were going to do because obviously like the end of that season, it's like, well, that's the end of that story arc. Which, yeah. by the way, pissed me the fuck off because I'm like, oh, well, she got what she wanted, didn't she?
I don't even remember. I just remember the last scene of her in the carriage. I stopped paying attention to them.
Yeah, I can see why.
I just felt like it was like just very dysfunctional.
Yeah.
I was like, you guys just need to actually talk to each other.
Oh,
I feel like you would solve a lot of problems.
Literally, like, if that kind of shit happened to me, I would yeet them out of my castle so fast. I would be like, get the fuck out. Like, no.
Castle.
Yeah.
You're the one with the castle in the situation.
Oh, yeah. Girl power, man. I'm the Duchess. I don't have a Duke. But yeah, it made me so angry. For people who haven't seen it, you'll see why. Because... I don't know how to talk about it without spoiling it.
I mean, it's been out for a while.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this is why I got onto the series, because there was so much controversy on this one scene. Because it was like, basically everyone sat there and they were like, yeah, this scene made me really uncomfortable. And then everyone else is like, you know that was rape, right? Like,
yeah.
Just people weren't, like, clicking on. And then it really annoyed me for them.
I feel like if at the start he had just said, I don't ever want to have kids.
Yeah.
Because my dad was a dickhead to me.
Yeah.
Then everything would have been fine.
Yeah, because
they wouldn't have fought so much.
Yeah.
And literally, if all he, like, obviously what she did was fucked.
Yeah.
But it's also like.
It's poor
communication. She didn't even know what sex was until they were married.
Well, yeah, that was that.
So there's just no sexual education or, like, none of that's a thing. But also, I feel like at the start, instead of saying, I can't have kids, he should have just said, I don't want to have children.
Yeah. He should have phrased it a bit better, but I actually went back and watched it. And what he says is, I can't give you children. So he never says he can't have them. He's just like,
but
I
can't.
But
it's still
give
the impression. I mean, this bitch doesn't even know how to have sex.
Oh,
like,
she doesn't even know what the bits are.
Yeah. You know, like, there's just, I feel like there's just, people just need to talk more.
Yeah. I think my big problem with it was that, you
and
know,
moan less.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, my big problem with it was once she figures it out, that was her solution. She's like, well, I'm just going to go get it anyway. I'm just like, bitch.
But she wouldn't even know what that is either, though.
Well, because that's what she figures it out. Because she talks to the, like, her.
But, like, if you don't know what sex is, you don't know what rape is.
Yeah, that's true.
So that also comes to me thinking that, like, if somebody had assaulted her, she wouldn't have known what it was.
Except, you know, then there's that scene where the creepy guy tries it on with her and she punches him in the face.
But that's because they're alone and he tries to kiss her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's
so, like, it's inappropriate touching, but, like, she still doesn't understand. Just, like, the sheer just two-brain-celledness of how that society works hurts me.
I think what hurts me most is that so many people nowadays watch that scene and we're just like, that was fine, right?
I'm just
no.
Like,
no. It was very, very hot.
Do you know what else? This is completely sort of off topic, but do you know what else really annoyed me in that show?
What?
The fucking dresses.
Oh, why was the waistline over their nipples?
Yeah, it was like up here and
I hated it.
I also really hated it because like I love watching shows like that for the fashion, but it's like they had the one template for dresses and then they just made 100 of them.
Yeah.
Like I was expecting like different shapes, different cuts, different everything, but it was all the same shape all the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. Because the other thing that really upset me is if I wore that dress, it really wouldn't suit me because I have an hourglass shape and so it would make me straight down.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that wouldn't suit me. And so I couldn't like picture myself wearing the dresses because I was like, no, that wouldn't look good. So
is that your other recommendation, Bridgerton?
The first 5.5 episodes. Then just stop.
5.5.
Yeah.
Not just 5.5.
Yeah, because it's like episode 6, but like halfway through. So watch up till that point. When she starts figuring things out, just stop watching.
Yeah.
That's my recommendation.
And there was like a weird, you know, the scene at the end with the bee? There's like the bee that goes out the window.
Yeah, what's with the bee?
So her dad died from a bee sting. So that's like a note for the people that read the books, I think. But it was a weird scene to include. I don't know.
Wait, whose dad?
The Bridgerton families.
Oh, there is no mention of that.
At the very, very start.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was like the bee was like a metaphor for Lady Whistledown and how she's always listening or something.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense.
It was, yeah, yeah.
Because I was watching that friggin' bee and I'm like, this is telling me something. I just don't know what it is.
I don't know what this sign is.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, all right. And actually, I saw a thing and I'll have to send it to you because I can't say it because it's a big spoiler, but there's a big Easter egg in the first scene with the person who's Lady Whistledown. And when you go back and watch it, it's like, oh.
I feel like we can just say, I can't remember her name is why I haven't said it yet.
I can. But yeah, it's something in her hair. She puts
Is it a whistle? Does she put a whistle down?
Did they have whistles back then?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
How else did trains make noise?
Oh, no. I mean, like, hand whistles.
Probably.
Like, yeah. That's nice.
What does she do? Put a pen in her hair?
Mm. Like a big feather one. And it's the one she writes with the whole time.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I
did actually call who it was going to be from the start. For a second there, I thought it was going to be the Queen.
I thought the Queen, and I also thought Eloise, but then
I didn't ever think it was going to be Eloise.
Well, she was just writing all the time.
She's just too much of a nutcase.
She's very...
I didn't like her.
I liked her until she got
I'm
really...
I'm going to cut most of this
out. Oh, okay. Let's talk about Bridgerton for a while.
this podcast is now a Bridgerton podcast, but it's only one episode long.
Well, we'll just rant about Bridgerton for the next 3 episodes. I've got enough to say about it, but yeah, I just watched the first 5.5. That's all you need to see.
I did enjoy the start, and then I sort of like started becoming annoyed at people.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. The main character is just not very likable.
She's so boring.
Yeah, you're just like. You're kind of a bitch, but, like, not even in a fun way. It's just, like...
You're not an entertaining bitch.
Exactly.
You're
like
grumpy.
Like, you know, sometimes there's bitchy characters, and you're like, I just want to see what you're going to do. Like, I like shows like that. But she's just annoying.
You know what? Everyone in that show is a floopy nana.
Agreed.
It's the first time and last time I'll ever use that word.
You say that now. I think it's growing on you.
I don't think I have anything for recommendation station. I've just been watching Buffy. Which Buffy's I do think good. Is a good show.
If you haven't watched Buffy by now, like...
Although I forgot it started in 1996.
It's so campy.
The green screen.
Yo.
The green screen.
I love the prosthetics too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. There's like... in episode 2... in season 2, there's like a episode where these hyenas possess Xander and a bunch of bullies. And instead of like... just like having eyes that glow in the dark as the hyenas, they have these like fake animatronic hyenas come out of this and it's just like, oh my God, I could spit a better hyena than whatever that's meant to be like. Oof.
It's so good. I love watching how the vampire transitions change over the season.
Yes. Just got into like the new, I think it's season 3 or 4 where they've just started going to college.
Oh yeah.
And, like, the transitions are so much better because it's no longer, like, the massive green screen key around them.
Yeah.
And, like, the background's all blurred. Yeah. That's so funny.
There's a very, like, noticeable shift.
Yeah. Yes.
But that's what makes it... Oh, that means you're getting Tara.
Tara?
Well, they say Tara.
Do they?
Yeah, Tara.
Yeah, soon. Not yet. I'm excited for the musical episode.
Oh, that's one of the best.
Did I ever tell you I was cast as Buffy for a musical episode show of the show?
You sure did.
Yeah.
But you didn't do it.
No. Regrets.
I'm just so upset.
I still know all of the words.
Oh, it's just, you know, every show does like a musical episode at some point, but
they're
Buffy
always
doesn't.
Shit. And yeah. Buffy is the only show with a decent musical episode I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Ever.
It's just amazing. And even though like a lot of them can't sing very well, they still all crush it.
Yeah. I think it's mainly because like the composer and stuff, but like they just do. I don't know. They just do it really well. There's just something about that soundtrack that's great.
I think that's the thing.
I think it's because it's within character.
Yeah.
Like the Xander and Anya song is very like within character and Spike and everything. Whereas like other musicals are just.
They take songs and then they jam it into the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas they wrote everything.
They wrote everything and they wrote it around the plot. Like the plot was already planted out and then they were like, let's do a musical episode in here.
Yeah.
And then they crafted the episode around the arcs and stuff, which I think is great. Now I'm very excited to keep watching it.
Yes. And even like the musical styles that each song, it fits the character. So like Buffy does all the like slow songs and Anya and Xander's is very upbeat and peppy and...
Yeah, very bitchy.
Yeah.
And Spike's is like rock.
Yeah. It's just, it works so well and you're just like... I'm so excited.
Anyway, so that's my recommendation station, Buffy. Sorry, this has been really long.
If you had to pick of any of the recommendations, I would pick Buffy. And then followed by Brooklyn Nine-Nine and then Bridgerton, but just the first 5.5 episodes.
I wouldn't even really recommend Bridgerton. I mean, everybody's kind of already seen it.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You could probably just read a synopsis and get
You know what you should watch if you want to watch period piece that's kind of like Bridgerton style is watch Pride and Prejudice. It's actually very good.
I've watched it.
I hadn't watched it until like last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like the Keira Knightley one?
Yeah, and it's because I felt like I already knew it all.
Yeah.
Because you just hear so much about it.
It's a very known story.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that movie.
Anyway, thanks so much for listening. I've been Ash.
I've been Laura.
Bye.
Bye.
This is Dead Obsessed.